Healthcare has a huge impact on the environment. And in one of the most important podcasts School of Surgery has made, I talked to Cleo Kennington, who's a consultant in emergency surgery at St George's Hospital, London, and also the Association of Surgeons of Great Britain and Ireland lead for sustainability. I first asked Cleo to give us a general background and then talk specifically about the impact of healthcare on the environment.
The Paris Agreement from 2015 demonstrated that it's really important that we need to keep well below 2 degrees of warming from pre-industrial levels to avoid sort of catastrophic impacts on the planet, which will substantially impact on our health. And since then, the Lancet countdown has been sort of analysing how we're achieving these goals.
What's the Lancet countdown? I've not heard.
Lancet Countdown is the Lancet Journal has recognised that especially there the impact that climate change has, because the Lancet is all about research into healthcare, and it's recognised what an important issue climate change is to global health, and so as a result they are doing an annual report to identify the progress we're making to try and reverse the changes that are happening with climate change. Their most recent report has identified how important it is that we focus our recovery from COVID-19 to ensure that it's also a sustainable recovery, to be able to ensure that our health and the environment also recovers. Otherwise, we're going to have ongoing issues. The COVID-19 is just the beginning. And so as part of that, the NHS has been looking into its impact on climate change. And actually, the NHS itself, as the biggest employer within the UK, produces 5.4% of the UK's carbon footprint. So sort of 1 in 20 of the amount of... of the amount of carbon that's produced is within healthcare. Actually, our health service is very good, and over many years it has been reducing its impact, but still the level is at 5.4%.
That is astonishing, isn't it? The healthcare, you think of things like big industry and dark satanic mills producing greenhouse gases, cars, etc. And one in 20, I mean, it's a huge employer, but 1 in 20 parts of the 5% of the overall greenhouse effect carbon emissions are from the NHS.
But what's brilliant is the NHS has produced a report. It was they commissioned last February, and some of the kind of sustainable healthcare experts looked into what could realistically be achieved by the NHS. Could we cut our emissions to the net zero that is needed to keep within the Paris Agreement goals by between 2030 and 2052? And they published in last October saying, yes, it is possible. It is going to take big changes within the NHS. It is going to be vital that every member of the healthcare service takes full responsibility for this, but it is possible. And they have a number of goals. The first is an 80% reduction of the direct emissions that are controlled by the NHS by 2028. So that's only 7 years from now. So it is really important that we start making a change. The report states that every chief exec, every hospital and every individual needs to take responsibility for that.
Oh, okay. How do people know about this? Because I must say, I'm probably moderately environmentally conscious, I suppose, but I've never heard of any of this. So what's happening with the message?
I'm not directly involved. For example, the Centre for Sustainable Health is very active at producing a kind of teaching people about how to make changes. They've run the Green Surgery Challenge this year. I don't know if any people might have heard of that. And they run Green Ward Challenges to try and improve the wards. And there are also other health groups kind of trying to get all the different colleges on board to try and focus towards these net zero challenge. The ASGBI, which I'm a member, is part of this UK Health Alliance on Climate Change.
Okay, great. So anyway, we'll go through the things, and then maybe you can direct us some resources later, because I'm sure when everyone's heard the effect and what they can do, they'll really want to do something about it. The sort of general things we can do, aren't there, is get to work in a more sustainable way, rather, you know, and so cycle or use electric vehicles, etc., public transport, all those
definitely.
Kind of.
So we were talking about 1 in 20 of our the UK's CO2 emissions are from NHS, but also apparently 1 in 20 vehicles on the road is doing work for the NHS, whether that's a patient visiting a visitor traveling to the hospital or staff or products. So 1 in 20 vehicles on the road, and they're all emitting CO2 emissions. So yes, absolutely. If we can change our practice to travel to hospitals more sustainably, that will make a massive difference. But the other thing is to try to reduce the number of trips to the hospital. So for example, if some of our staff can work from home, you know, we found through COVID that actually we can manage, you know, not everything, some things didn't work so well, but having some of our work done from home, but also to reduce patient visits to hospital, so really promoting the telephone follow-ups when they're helpful, that can make a difference as well.
Yeah, and it'll stop furring coronary arteries waiting to get into the car parking space for visitors and patients as well, won't it?
Yeah, okay. I mean exactly, that walking and cycling actually will reduce the amount of disease. So
there's huge health benefits from just not being in the car, aren't there, and moving slightly more than what we do. Okay, so on the getting to work thing, so I work in a hospital where there's quite crowded roads around, and I used to cycle to work, but it feels a bit unsafe. One of my colleagues was had an accident on the way where, ironically, a WRVS lady drove into him. You know, what kind of things can we campaign for in the hospital about getting here and in a sustainable way?
Absolutely, it's vital that hospitals are active in campaigning for improving the safety, not just for environmental reasons, but a significant amount of trauma is, at least a third is from the roads. But actually, although everyone can tell a story of somebody that they know who's been hit by a bike, you don't tell the stories of the people you know who've come into hospital with heart attacks and or cancer or other conditions related to inactivity. And there have been several studies demonstrated, even on a population level, that you are much safer cycling to work in terms of number of times you get admitted to hospital than if you drive. So although it's much more visible, it isn't more dangerous to cycle to work, but making changes to the road infrastructure and ensuring your hospital supports those is valuable.
Yeah. Do hospitals have a sustainability officer?
Yes, all hospitals do, but they are often very underfunded, and their power is variable. There are many hospitals who've got outspoken is the word, sustainability officers who've made really good changes. There's one, for example, I think from Leeds, who's making a real change in masks. So if you think about the masks we've all been compelled to use since the onset of COVID, and there are now reusable masks that can be washed up to 40 times and are as effective than the disposable ones. And she's doing a very good job at getting them implemented within the health service. That's something that you can do, is get to know your sustainability officer in your hospital and support the work that they do.
Okay.
They have difficulties engaging with the clinicians and understanding the relevance of what we do and what can change.
Okay. Well, thanks. So we're at work now. We've got here very sustainably and in a way that's beneficial to our health. What can we do when we get to work?
I like to think about the changes that we can make under it's the four principles of sustainable healthcare. So the important thing is always to prevention always comes at the top. Reduce, reuse, recycle is a mantra that's used in sustainability, and that has been sort of adapted healthcare. So the first thing is prevention, and we've covered that a little bit when talking about cycling to work. But if you can prevent ill health and prevent a need for healthcare requirement, healthcare is in itself quite a carbon intense industry. So preventing it will always be the best thing to do. So as a surgeon, every patient we can see, we can start asking about risk factors, modifiable risk factors, such as physical inactivity, smoking, and start sort of addressing them, talking to people. When people come to a hospital, it's called a teachable moment. So if as a surgeon, we're really well respected, we say, well, actually this abscess you've got is because you're smoking and I can help you. I can refer you to this quit smoking service. That will make a difference to prevent them coming back again. And so they may not come back with an abscess, but it will also mean that they don't come back with the heart attack and the cancer and other conditions. So that's the first thing that as surgeons we can think about on a sustainability front.
So save yourself and save the world in the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 If it, I think there was a good quote. If it's good for the planet, it's good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So what next? So we coach people, we give them the advice that hopefully many of us give anyway when we interact with patients, but it has benefits that I think a lot of us haven't really considered. That's really interesting. Yeah. And then what's the next thing we all should do?
So the next thing is patient empowerment. So actually, an educated, informed patient can do a lot to prevent reduce their use of healthcare resources. So for example, the Get Fit for Surgery, it's kind of along the same line, but if a patient is going to need an operation, for example, they're going to need a cholecystectomy, but you educate them on the benefits of and the importance of improving their health in the run-up to their operation, then they're going to have a much lower risk of complications. And it's complications that are really resource intense, return to theatres, ITU stays, especially like dialysis has a really big carbon footprint. So all these things will reduce the impact of the individual operation. And the other thing is shared decision making. So this is something that's very topical at the moment, and there's sort of developing this concept, but making sure that the patient is really involved in the decision. And you might realize that if the patient understands why the surgery is being done, the risks and the benefits, that actually for them the operation is not something that they want, and they may avoid having the operation altogether. Using that part, so really empowering the patient to understand the healthcare and why they need it, is helpful.
So a lot of the things that are best practice that we do anyway for other reasons have big impacts on environmental impact of healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly hadn't really thought that before. It's absolutely fascinating. So, okay. So we've empowered the patient and we've tried to stop them being ill to consume and to consume resource in the future. But we do have to treat some people, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. So the next thing is to consider much a more lean service delivery. Thinking about the whole pathway into theatre. So the patient's journey is not just turning up at the operating theatre. It's thinking about streamlining pathways. So for example, that when they I've mentioned this briefly already, but when they come to the hospital for their their clinic appointment, if they can have their pre-op assessment at the same time, then that avoids two journeys to the hospital. The other thing thinking about, for example, on lean pathways is the need for group and save. So we do a group and save for all patients, but actually, is that necessary? The pathway I'm trying to change within my hospital at the moment is patients are asked to come back back to the hospital for an extra visit a few days before their operation to have the group and save so that it's in date and time for the surgery. And actually, very rarely do those patients need a transfusion. So is that necessary? So if we've got a historic one, could we manage it at the same time? And the concept of telephone follow up that I've mentioned as well.
Yeah. Okay. What about blood? What about tests in general? So, over the years, I've noticed a massive move to the increase of tests that perform from blood tests to imaging. I mean, imaging must be have a real impact on the carbon footprint, as CT scans and MRs use a huge amount of electricity. So.
Yes. Interesting question. It's not something I've thought about a lot of. But so, for example, it is very important, though. So in that we use the imaging, because a CT scan in itself is a lower carbon footprint than an operation. So if you can do a CT scan and prove that the patient doesn't have appendicitis, then that would have a lower impact than doing a diagnostic laparoscopy that may then have a complication and all the subsequent carbon footprint.
Yeah, or indeed manage the appendicitis conservatively.
Yes. So, but certainly to follow guidelines for the number of tests. So not doing a CT scan just because the number of incidental findings that you'll get from a CT scan. Mm. So better kind of weighing that up in the pathway as well.
Yeah, I think consider why you're asking for a test, isn't it? Because not only is it good clinical reasoning and good clinical management and management of resource, but again, it's this thing about the downstream effects on the carbon footprint of your healthcare. Yeah. Okay, so we've done that. So a lot of that's about efficiency, about joined up thinking, again, people just to come once and one stop for everything, thinking about what we do, and that all makes perfect sense. And I think, aside from carbon impact, it's just efficient for the trust, isn't it, to have everything working as possible.
A lot of the time low carbon measures are actually cost effective as well.